It's hard to imagine trying to eat on $4 a day, but it can be done if you think in terms of meal planning and economizing. Our guest this hour knows because she's done it. Leanne Brown took the unusual, took the usual dollar amount allotted by SNAP, food stamps, and ran with it. The result is the book Good and Cheap, Eat Well on $4 a Day. The book started as Leanne Brown's capstone project for her master's degree in food studies from New York University. She put it on the web in PDF form. It was downloaded 700,000 times, and then she launched a crowdfunding campaign to self-publish the book. The latest edition is from Workman Publishing, and Leanne Brown is our guest on The Exchange today. Leanne, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
So you moved to New York from Canada. What did you observe when you arrived about food budgets on the low end?
Sure. Well, to be honest, I mean, the first little while, it was really just adjusting to New York City itself. I remember one of my first experiences was going into a grocery store and trying to buy. It was my birthday just a few days after we moved, and we were staying with some friends, and I was like, I want to make myself a birthday cake. And I went to sort of go and try to find all of the different things that I needed for a birthday cake and tried to sort of cobble together. My friends weren't really cooks, and so they didn't even have, like, a pan, and I ended up making this bizarre, like, chocolate cake in the microwave. It was really hilarious. But really, I suppose what struck me was just that it was different. And then during my studies over the next couple of years, I just became really drawn to the food stamps program. I think largely, honestly, because it's a difference. It's a big difference. I think Canada and the United States are very much sort of sister countries. There's a lot of similarities, but there are these differences, and those can seem really, really interesting, I think. And I just noticed that, you know, in grad school you have these big conversations about sort of the state of the world, and of course we had many, many of those. And I love the sort of food movement, the good food movement. I think it's doing so much good. But at the same time, it also feels like it's really a place where middle-class voices are the norm. And I felt that people who maybe are lower income don't have, you know, might be welcome at the table, but we're not currently there and weren't, their voices weren't really being heard. And I just felt like that was somewhere that I could try to address something. When it came time to do a thesis project, I was thinking, you know, I don't necessarily want to live sort of in the world of academia forever. I want something that will sort of have a life outside of that. And so I thought about creating this cookbook and just ended up being foolish enough to go for it.
You didn't want your thesis to end up on a shelf in the library someplace.
No, exactly. It was like, oh, I want more than, like, my mom to read this. Yeah, I think everyone feels that way.
All right, you mentioned one woman, and I'm going to guess you met a lot more than that, said she's tired of the what's for dinner game. Explain what that is.
Yeah, I mean, I hear from people all the time, every day, especially lately with the book sort of being released, re-released again last month. I've been hearing from so many people. I think, you know, sometimes people can think that there's one way, you know, there's 46 million people in the United States who are on food stamps currently. And that's not even to mention, you know, people who are sort of close to that line, like maybe seniors who are living on a fixed income, or students, or someone where there's maybe only a single earner in the house. And so there's huge numbers of people, and there's no one way that, you know, people live and that people eat. And so there's so many different issues that we're talking about when we talk about, like, how does one feed oneself for very little. And I think there's this tendency to think that people don't know how to cook. And certainly there are some people who don't know how to cook, absolutely, and that can make a huge difference. But for a lot of folks, they're great cooks, but they just maybe don't always have the creativity sort of at their fingertips. They might be looking for something new. And that's been wonderful to hear from people who say, like, oh, here's, you know, five new dinner ideas that I just never thought of, and this is just really making life better. And that's a wonderful thing to be able to do, because I think food, not only obviously, of course, it should nourish us and give us strength, but I think it also needs to give us, you know, that emotional strength as well, the sort of joy that it can bring to eat three times a day, especially maybe with family or with someone you love. It's a really wonderful thing, and I think everyone deserves that and wants that.
I notice that you think of cooking as the closest thing we have to magic.
I do. It's like a potion, right?
Uh-huh. We get to make up these things.
Yes.
So the budget constraints, the $4 a day, is that a standard figure for everyone? Does it slide up or down based on how many people in the family, level of income, any of that?
Yeah. So it's a really complex notion, which is why we sort of, the shorthand is to say about $4 a day, but it varies massively. There's the calculation for sort of what you'll actually get if you are accepted into the food stamps program is based on income, based on family size, based on how many dependents you have, a lot of different factors. And so the sort of standard rule of thumb is that people have about $4 a day to work with, just because saying like, oh, you might have, you know, $263 from the government, and then you have a little bit from leftover from your own income or from these other sources, is just becomes incredibly complex. But it's about $4 per person per day. So if we're talking about a family of four, it might be closer to about $16 a day.
Which seems impossibly tight for some people, because, I mean, we all know people who, you know, in one burger, they've already spent that amount on lunch.
Of course. And it's never, the one thing that I really want to make clear is I will never suggest that this is easy, or that it's sort of like, oh, $4 a day, no problem. Everyone's going to have a great and dandy time. It's a very difficult thing to get through, and it's certainly not ideal. But it's a reality, like I said, for 46 million people, and I think there's some hope to be had, and there's still some wonderful food that can be possible.
And the recipes are in the book, Good and Cheap. Eat Well on $4 a Day. Leanne Brown is the author and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with Leanne about processes and recipes themselves, and you can join the conversation. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Leanne Brown, Good and Cheap, and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about food and how to prepare decent meals on a very limited budget. Leanne Brown went ahead and examined what it would take to feed yourself well on what amounts to the food stamp budget. CalFresh in California, Oregon Trail in Oregon. $4 a day was the rough figure she aimed for. Her book is called Good and Cheap. Eat Well on $4 a Day. You can join the discussion on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Leanne, you said that this is not an easy thing to do. And I just wonder, just in process, as you were trying to prepare these recipes, were there a lot of moments where it's like, oh, we just can't quite get to this recipe with this budget?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. All the time. But it's also, it's a really interesting, it all depends on the individual to some extent as well. You know, everyone, I think what's really important is to think about in your own life, you know, what are some things that you really can't live without? What are some foods that are really important to you? And most of the time you can find a way, assuming we're not talking about caviar or something like that, but there are ways in which if there's a food that's really important to you that you should be able to budget in such a way that you can have it from time to time. I don't think anyone should ever deny themselves things. It's really just a matter of trying to kind of fit it into the budget. But certainly things like, things like fresh fruit, like fresh berries are something that I really struggled with, how to really fit that into a $4 a day diet or budget, not diet, good God. At the same time, I also hear from people fairly frequently who are still able to, you know, who might be on food stamps themselves, but are still often able to, you know, find great deals and have still have access to some of these things. It's just that I think the one thing that is sort of a big difference is that you don't necessarily get to have all of the foods that you would really like all of the time. The sort of overall strategy is, you know, you sort of develop a pantry of basic things like, you know, we're talking rice, dried beans, lentils, pasta, maybe cans of tomatoes and things like this, really wonderful all-purpose things that you can make, you know, 200 different recipes out of. And then what you do is sort of supplement that with fresh fruits and vegetables and with, you know, the stuff that's on sale that week. And so as a result, you know, you may not always be eating the thing that you absolutely want, but you can still have a great deal of variety in your budget, and you can still enjoy a lot of these wonderful fresh foods when they do come on sale and when they're in season.
You point out you're not a dietitian, but did any dietitians give you critiques or suggestions?
Yeah, from time to time. I actually hear mostly really positive things from dietitians. A lot of people, it's been one of the really wonderful, sort of unexpected things about the project has been we really pushed to get the books into the hands of nonprofits all across the country. Right now, we've worked with over 700 different organizations, and there's a lot of people who are working in the sort of public health sphere and, you know, dietitians who are saying, you know, I'm working with my clients to sort of help them make some healthier choices or encourage people to make healthier choices, and found that your book is a really useful tool for that, and that's wonderful to hear because truthfully, my intention was to create really beautiful, really tasty, really appealing food that, yes, absolutely has is as healthy as we can possibly make it, but it's certainly not sort of precisely designed to be a diet book at all. The fact is when you're eating good, basic, whole foods and lots of fruits and vegetables, it will make you healthier.
Are fruits and vegetables pretty much at the center of what you're recommending for meal planning here?
They absolutely are, and that's not just for, it's for practical reasons for sure. Meat is definitely something that is, should absolutely be a part of your diet if meat is important to you, and certainly not something that I would ever say is like, oh, it's banned, no meat allowed, everyone should become a vegetarian, not at all. But it is difficult to make it sort of the center of the plate like it is in so many sort of classic American meals. You know, a big steak with maybe a side of potatoes and that kind of thing, can it's expensive. Like, that's a fact. Meat in my cookbook really is more something that adds flavor, that is used sort of in smaller quantities and then stretched out with other, with either, you know, grains or other vegetables. And, you know, the thing is vegetables and fruits, there's so much more really variety that can be had in the world of fruits and vegetables than in the world of, you know, grains and meat. And so it can actually be a really, really exciting thing to sort of think vegetable first and design meals around those things because you can have tremendous variety. And, you know, in the summer right now, I mean, it's August, so we're hitting like peak sweet, delicious corn season, and we have zucchinis, you know, coming out of our ears, and it means that we can have some really interesting flavors, whereas, you know, maybe in late October and November, we're talking about, you know, rich butternut squash dishes and long-simmered, you know, onions and soups, and, you know, that's really, that can be a really wonderful experience.
Maybe August should be renamed zucchini because it seems like the month when everybody's trying to offer you some.
Do you have you had this? Has anyone come by knocking on your door with a bag full of them?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, it happens every year. Yeah, but this year the guy on our street who does this a lot put it out and just said free, help yourself. So it was
right,
sort of, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Leanne Brown's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Good and Cheap. Jay in Walterville has emailed in. He says it's not a widely known fact that USDA really wants you to use SNAP to grow veggies. You can buy vegetable seeds and plants at most markets with SNAP, which Oregon Trail or Cal Fresh, depending on your state. Many farmers markets, plus ready-to-eat organic produce. The price-to-produce ratio is like a buck gets you 10 in food, lots of pounds of really good food. He also points out you can get soils, plant food, and garden help free from many sources. Community gardeners and permaculture groups will help, including advice. It really improves the quality of your diet, and you probably need the exercise to get in shape for that coming job or general good health, mental too. And he says it's a more healthy choice than the lobbying and use for soda pop, chips, and candy purchases on SNAP. So food stamps, SNAP, Cal Fresh, Oregon Trail, I mean, whatever you want to call it, it does actually give you some flexibility in what you can buy, as you discovered too, Leanne.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm so glad he brought that up. I think that's, it's been really cool to kind of see, I can't quite recall when that happened, but yeah, you can buy seeds, and it's a wonderful thing, and I think that if you're lucky enough to have either a little patch of ground that is your own or maybe access to a community garden, I think that's a wonderful, an absolutely wonderful option. Of course, there are plenty of people for whom that just isn't possible. But it's wonderful if you can, and I certainly actually have this lovely story from this woman named Brenda who wrote to me last summer. She's a grandmother. She lives in this very small town in Texas, and she looks after her two grandchildren. She's the sole care provider, and she wrote to me sort of when she was at a bit of a crossroads, and she was saying that they their family uses SNAP to get by, and it's been wonderful for them. But she found that at the end of most months, she's still having to hit up the food pantry, and that she found that often the foods that were there were not really the types of things she wanted to feed her 9 and 11-year-old girls. And they were sort of high in sugar and just not great choices, but it was sort of where she felt, it was kind of what she had to do. And she had begun to plant a garden, and she was telling me all about it, and, just shared really a lot of wonderful things about her life. And she actually got back in contact with me a few months ago, gave me the little update on, of course, what the grandchildren are doing, and it was very sweet. And then she just happened to mention, sort of at the end, as though it was no big deal, that she'd lost over 30 pounds, eating foods from Good and Cheap and a few other internet sources, and she said that they weren't going to the food pantry anymore, and their garden was flourishing, and she was off all of her cholesterol medication, all this kind of thing, and it was just like, I think I cried for about 10 minutes.
Extraordinary
to hear.
That's an amazing story. Leanne Brown, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is called Good and Cheap, Eat Well on $4 a Day. Join the discussion. Let us know about your experiences, your stories of trying to make a decent meal out of not much money. 800-838-3760 is our phone number. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Jeannie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Leanne Brown.
Hi. Boy, you stole my book, girl. I was going to write one years ago called How to Live on Food Stamps. But when I was on them, I learned, I'll just name three things that I learned was baking soda, okay, make great Toll House cookies.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And
clean
your sink.
You have to have chocolate cookies in your life, right?
Yeah, poor man's Drano, baking soda, and brush my teeth. They don't have to buy toothpaste.
Right.
I mean, when I absolutely had zero income, people say, well, how do you how do you survive? How do you live like that? Well, I brush my teeth with baking soda. I make great cookies. And I clean my sink, poor man's Drano. And the avocado. Now, that was kind of a luxury. But,
right.
Boy, did I get benefits. Half of it went into guacamole. Half in a salad. Maybe just lettuce, tomato in there, and avocado. And the peel, I could do a great facial, the gritty part.
Oh,
and the
wow.
Seed, I had a free house plant that grew to the ceiling.
Uh-huh. So
and
you
the
really...
other one, olive oil.
Uh-huh.
I know it's spendy. There's times I can get it $3.99, and it lasts a long time. It's healthier. But also just a little dab on my elbows or dry skin. And
right.
Rub
I,
some
so I think
between
you're
my hands.
Point. These items that can be used in different ways, there's no sort of room in the budget for something that you can only use one way. It has to have multiple uses for you, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really, Jeannie, thanks for the call. I appreciate the tips on things that you can use, things that are food products as well as things that can be used in other ways around the house. I have to admit there were some people who've trod this ground before you. The book from about, 1971 comes back to mind, The Food Stamp Gourmet. I don't know if you had a chance to look at any of the predecessors out there.
Yeah, I've checked out a few of them. There weren't too many that were sort of modern. I mean, I think what's really cool about sort of our modern food system is, things have changed. Like, since the 70s, like, the types of foods that are available are so, so massively different. There's incredible variety that's available even in your sort of average supermarket. And so I think that, mostly I really just wanted to share. I think there's a ton of incredible books out there that sort of, trod the same ground, whether they're things that were released sort of by churches, these wonderful kind of community cookbooks that are there. I think there's some incredible ones out there. But what I really wanted to create was something that had a lot of beautiful photos and that sort of looked like the modern cookbooks that are available in most bookstores these days. Things that sort of didn't look like sort of cheap meals. I wanted them to look really beautiful and really attractive and sort of celebrate the beauty of very simple, still very inexpensive food.
There's some great photography in here, and this is entering the realm of what I think has come to be called food porn now. It's just, but they're really...
Yeah, the super close-ups.
Yeah, really, really sexy pictures of things like the chana masala and stuff like that. The pictures are wonderful. And the recipes, too. Let's talk about those. Let me take another call here first. Jacob in Springfield, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Leanne Brown. Her book is Good and Cheap.
Hi, I wanted to plug the versatility of the egg. It's a
source
of protein and fat that, you know, a lot of people kind of overlook. But you can buy a dozen for less than $2. And if you know how to cook an egg, you'll never starve, no matter how poor you are. And I think a good skill for high school students or even college students is you give them a dozen eggs and say, cook this 12 ways, you know, and there are pretty simple recipes, and you really, it's as easy as making toast. You know, you can make a hard-boiled egg, a soft-boiled egg, egg benedict, you know, frittata, quiche, omelet with butter, omelet with cheese, a Denver omelet, you know, and it's a good source of protein, and a dozen eggs will last you a week. But I think, you know, people don't, it's a way of understanding protein chemistry and how fats behave, and that's the basis for a lot of cooking skills.
All right. Thanks for that, Jacob.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that. And in fact, this is great because Jacob now launches us into your list of tips. And number seven is always buy eggs.
That's right. Jacob and I could not be in more agreement. I was nodding to myself the whole time he was talking there.
Well, but then number eight on that list is buy expensive eggs. Why?
Right. Well, so it's not that you have to. It's really if there is an option for it, I think it's worth it. One of the sort of differences, I think sort of bigger differences between my cookbook and, or between Good and Cheap sort of philosophy and a lot of other budget cookbooks is that it's kind of more about value than about the absolute cheapest thing always. I think, you know, there's going to be some weeks where you have to buy the cheap eggs, and that's a reality, and I don't think anyone should feel bad about that at all, not for one second. But the more expensive eggs, you know, the free run eggs that are, you know, maybe available at a local market or buy from a local farmer, they just taste so much better. In my experience, you know, the yolks are these bright yellow yolks. It has so much more flavor. And when we're talking about something that, as Jacob was saying, you know, is going to be the center of your meal, you know, that's bringing so much flavor, and you're making really simple things, like really just something like tomato scrambled eggs, you know, one of the recipes in the book, you want your ingredients to be the best that they can be so that you can have something really enjoyable. And so I think that even though it's a bit more expensive, it's still really good deal. You know, even in New York where, you know, a dozen eggs can be $4.50, sometimes even $5 for a dozen, and, you know, that is double or more the price of sort of the cheapest eggs, it's still pretty darn good value. You know, it's less than a dollar an egg. And so I just, that's my personal feelings about it. I don't think anyone should feel stuck like, oh, we better do this or we're not doing it right. But it's just been my personal experience that I think that's worth it.
And be careful with undercooked eggs, you point out, too. So enough said there. So at the top of the list of tips, though, is to buy versatile ingredients. You gave us a hint of this before, but expand the zone just a little bit here.
Completely. Well, and your other caller kind of really, really made that clear. It's sort of the mother of all the tips, really, is that you need to buy things that you have multiple uses for. You know, when you're thinking about what to stock your pantry with, make sure that it's not some, you know, you don't want to start with things like, I don't know, saffron strands or something where you're like, okay, I use this in paella when I make paella, and that's the only time I'm ever going to use it. You want to buy things that you have like 20 different ideas for so that when, so that you can be a person who can walk into your kitchen, kind of look, okay, here's what we've got in the fridge and here's what's in the cupboard, and I know I can make something out of this, rather than being stuck kind of with, because it's just not going to be good value for you. If you have something in your cupboard that's just sort of collecting dust that you don't know how to use, you don't know how to expand, you can't cook it with eggs, you know, you can't throw it in with rice, you can't do these sorts of things with it, you're going to have difficulty. But something like, I always come back to like a can of tomatoes. I always have cans of tomatoes. You know, at this time of year, of course, fresh tomatoes are incredible. But most of the rest of the year, canned tomatoes are such a great deal. And, you know, you should never buy a jar of pasta sauce. You should always just get a can of tomatoes, throw a little bit of fresh garlic with some either butter or olive oil into a pan, and top it up with your tomatoes, and you're away. You have one of the most fabulous pasta sauces you can imagine. It's going to kick, you know, the butt of the jarred sauce, and, you know, for half the price, let alone, you know, you can cook your grains with tomatoes, you can throw it into stews and soups. There's just so many possibilities with a can of tomatoes or with a big bag of rice.
So versatile ingredients, and buy a lot of them, you point out, too. And then the bigger thing is to just think in terms of not just for today's meal.
Definitely. Yeah, sort of plan and think ahead. You know, what are we... That's why, you know, you buy versatile things that you know, okay, I can make this type of meal this day, and then I'll use the leftovers in this way, and kind of think through your week so that you know that you can be solid in the decisions that you've made at the grocery store and not be sort of worried that you're going to run out.
Leanne Brown's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk more with her about her book, Good and Cheap, Eat Well on $4 a Day. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as well. Back to talk about recipes and meal planning and how to make all this work on a small budget. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Leanne Brown and you in a minute 20. And on today's Jefferson Exchange, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking about cooking on a budget today. Leanne Brown examined what it takes to make a decent set of meals on a food stamp style budget. Food stamps, of course, called CalFresh in California and Oregon Trail in Oregon. Either way, it's the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Her book is called Good and Cheap, Eat Well on $4 a Day. That was the figure she shot for. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts, your questions, your comments, your own recipes, perhaps. 800-838-3760 around the region by email jx@jeffnet.org. So we were just starting to talk about some of the strategies here. Buy versatile ingredients, buy lots of them, and then build a pantry over time. So you really have to think long term to make this strategy work, it sounds like.
For sure. Well, and I think it's about sort of changing your habits, but or maybe not. Maybe it's just making really small changes. It depends. You know, if we're starting from sort of absolutely nothing, you know, maybe you don't cook at all, it'll be a longer process. But if it's something where, you know, maybe there's you have your go-to meals already, it's just sort of changing a few key things. And the other thing is it's important not to sort of jump in and expect everything to sort of immediately change. Everything should sort of be done slowly and carefully and make sure that it works for you. You know, there's no point in sort of going to the store and buying like a ton of, you know, buying so many fresh vegetables, like more than you can possibly, you know, eat in time or maybe, you know, being unrealistic and thinking I'm going to be able to cook all these sort of this week and then life gets in the way. It's important to sort of take baby steps and not rush in too much to set yourself up so that you can, you know, have success and really enjoy cooking and sort of create the good intentions so that you can enjoy cooking and so it doesn't become this horrible chore.
You recommend buying fresh bread. I mean, we're talking about fresh artisan bread or just what do you think?
Ideally, I mean, it really depends. Everyone has different sort of access issues. Of course, you know, if you're lucky enough to live maybe in the center of the city where you have wonderful bakeries around, what you can do is, you know, buy your bread from the bakery because it's going to be so wonderful. And often, if you go sort of towards the end of the day, a lot of breads are either half price or they're sort of trying to get rid of them, so you can get good deals. Sometimes you can get day-old bread, which you can day-old or older bread. I have a lot of different recipes for that in the book, actually. One of my favorite meals, actually, at this time of year in the summer when you just sort of want lighter food is a panzanella salad, which takes day-old or longer bread, like really hard bread, like the kind you like smack against the table and it like makes a knocking sound. And you break that up and you add juicy vegetables like tomatoes and cucumbers. I love to add like other sorts of stone fruits. This to me, like, oh, peaches would be incredible. And sort of mix it up with a dressing or actually, you know, when everything is really ripe, you don't even need the dressing because all the juices from the vegetables are sort of soaking in there. But this hard sort of yucky bread becomes this incredible flavor sponge, and it's just like the most delicious salad you can possibly imagine because it's just bursting with flavor, and that really can make sort of day-old bread into something really wonderful. And the reason I suggest, you know, buying these sorts of breads, you know, either at the bakery section in the part of the supermarket or, you know, just sort of getting these more artisan-style breads is just because They have more, a little bit more versatility than regular sandwich bread, which sort of always stays sort of somewhat eerily soft.
Gummy fresh, yeah.
Yeah.
you're talking about using the bread until pretty much right up to the time it becomes unusable. But in a similar vein, one of the tips in the front of the book is to get creative with wilted vegetables. How wilted? I mean, you want to stop just short
well,
of EU,
I think
right?
Obviously if there's like some juice, some like brown juice coming up, it maybe let it go, you know. I think use your common sense. Like if it seems like utterly unappealing, then you're going to want to get rid of it. But I think, you know, sometimes I'm sure everyone can relate to that sort of moment when you're like, oh, man, I forgot about that spinach, and it's kind of getting wilted, and it's not, like, standing up and beautiful and crisp and presenting as, hello, I'm spinach. It is wilting over, and there are so many ways that you can reuse this. I mean, one of the best, scrambled eggs, or throwing it into I have a recipe, again, eggs, for a crustless quiche, and, pardon me. And basically all these, you know, older vegetables that maybe are a little bit past their prime, they're not as crisp and perfect for a salad, are wonderful when you cook them, either, you know, in this sort of lovely egg custard, or you can throw them in with some leftover rice and have a fabulous fried rice. Of course, soups and stews, you know, even trying roasting some of these things. You're not going to want to roast spinach, of course, but sort of heartier vegetables that can be roasted, even if they're getting a little wilted and past their prime, can really come back to life if we cook them. And so it's just important to, in some ways, it's really just about, rather than thinking, oh, man, I better go get some more food from the store, just taking the time to go, actually, what do I still have on hand, and can I make something nice out of that before you sort of go off and buy something new?
This one's got a little life left in it, yeah,
yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially the omelet part. That's a good thing for Saturday mornings, I find.
100%, little leftovers omelet. Or even I heard, I spoke to a gentleman recently, and I do this too, so I was super excited that he mentioned it, that he has like leftovers pizza night where they'll make their own lovely dough, which is, you know, so inexpensive to make your own pizza dough and really pretty easy. And then they make different kinds of pizzas and sort of really have fun as a family making leftover pizzas.
So this list of tips in the front of the book is generally a proactive. There's only one don't on here, and don't buy drinks. Can you explain that one?
Right. Well, essentially drinks, like other than maybe milk, there's just no practical reason. We don't need them. Certainly they're nice to have, and if they're very important to you, again, you should make them a treat from time to time. But things like especially soda and juice, it's just, it's empty calories. It's not going to fill you up. We're talking about $4 a day. You need to make sure that everything that you're spending your money on is something that is going to leave you satisfied and feeling better. I would certainly not say, like, if drinking special drinks is really important to you, you should make it a treat and something that you do from time to time. You know, don't torment yourself. But it's definitely a really simple way to just make your grocery bill so much lower, just very, very quickly. And you really won't miss it because the body just only needs water. And I do have a few suggestions for homemade drinks, I think, that are a little bit better value, that have, you know, some caloric value, that things like agua fresca, which is really just water with lovely fruits suspended in it, and then you drink that and you enjoy the benefits of the fruit as well, and the whole fruit rather than just the juice, which is like pretty much pure sugar and doesn't have that extra fiber that will leave you actually feeling full and satisfied.
Leanne Brown's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book on eating on a tight budget is called Good and Cheap, Eat Well on $4 a Day. The equipment section, every cookbook has one of these. Is there what rises to the top of your list?
Ooh, well, I mean, I don't want to sort of go too long about the sort of basics because it really seems obvious. You definitely want to have a great knife and a wonderful cutting board, and you want to have, you know, something to saute in, something to bake in, you know, or something to roast in. My personal favorite tool, honestly, is the microplane, which is this little, it used to be a woodworking tool. And so it stays extremely sharp. And because it was used to shave wood before, it's so sharp. And so it's incredible to shave things like really hard cheeses like Parmesan or Romano. But you can also shave, I love to use it to zest citrus, you know, lemons and limes and oranges. And I tend to use those all the time. it just allows you to get the most out of things. You know, you don't need to use nearly as much cheese because you have this really lovely fine dust that you can get, you know, and get really into the crevices of your pasta without having to use quite so much. So it's a wonderful tool, I think, for sort of really making the most out of things. Things like, I mean, in some ways, lemon and lime zest is this extra that you get for free. I think, you know, you might think I'm buying this for the juice from the lemons or the limes, but the zest on the outside, the has incredible, incredible flavor to it. It's where the essential oils come from. And so if you use a little bit of that in different sauces, in drinks, in, you know, maybe if you're going to get fancy to make syrups and things like that, in baking, you can get so much more out of it. So when you're buying, you know, a lemon or a lime, you're getting the zest and the juice at the same time. And the microplane can sort of help you make the most of that. Another really wonderful thing is a immersion blender. If you don't have a sort of stand-up blender, an immersion blender is a really wonderful alternative because not only, of course, can you still make your smoothies and things like that, but you can also, you know, when you're making soups, if you want to have a blended soup, all you have to do is stick the immersion blender directly in the pot rather than having to wait for it to cool down and then pour it into another receptacle and have another dish to clean. It's just a lot more fast and efficient.
Ah, the old hand blender. Yeah, those do come in handy. Let's talk about some of the recipes. Egg sandwiches with mushroom hash is fascinating. Talk about the hash part of that.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, hash can be anything, right? I mean, I think we're used to thinking of it as only potato. But in this recipe, it's a bunch of mushrooms because people absolutely love garlicky mushrooms and a little bit of potato. But that could be anything. I mean, any of your favorite vegetables could stand, could hang out in there. Really, a hash is like a saute. And you can add different spices to it. I really love smoked paprika because it adds that sort of really savory quality to things. I often like to add that to hashes. So, yeah, essentially you can use, you know, any sort of longer cooking vegetable can be a hash. And I do like to actually add this to the sandwich itself because then it becomes this just incredibly hearty, you know, very restaurant-feeling sort of a sandwich. But you can absolutely, of course, have it on the side.
Quinoa doesn't surprise me to see it come up here fairly fast. I mean, it's got a lot of benefits. What is quinoa all about?
It does. Well, so quinoa is not something I don't have many recipes for it because I know, in my experience anyway, at least in markets in New York, it can sometimes be fairly fairly expensive. But if you can get a decent deal on it, it's wonderful. So I have a recipe for breakfast quinoa, and essentially I have all these different ways to make oatmeal and flavor it in this interesting way. And I just wanted to sort of show, you know what? You could use any other kind of grain and kind of have a similar sort of experience to having oatmeal in the morning. And quinoa is a wonderful thing. It has a lot more protein in it than other grains do, and so it has it sort of lasts with you a little bit longer. Sometimes if you have oatmeal in the morning, you can sort of be hungry within a couple of hours, but quinoa tends to sort of stick with you a little bit longer. I know that's one of my mother's favorite things to have for breakfast. She makes that all the time.
Kale is another item that, like quinoa, might take a little practice. You got some general guidelines for kale preparation?
Oh, sure. I mean, I love kale. It's like, I think the thing is not to think of it as this sort of fancy or difficult thing. It's really like, it's like any other hearty green. It's like collards. It's like Swiss chard. It's tougher than spinach, but it can absolutely be used in a salad or, I mean, mainly people do tend to cook with it like any hearty green. It stands up to the heat really well, and so it just wilts down a little bit into whatever you're making. But I really love to use it actually in salads because it lasts so much better than, say, a more tender leaf like a romaine lettuce or these sort of softer lettuces. If you finely chop your kale and leave it in even like quite a hearty dressing, like a thicker, you know, creamier dressing, you can leave it for a really long time and it won't kind of wilt or lose its oomph. You are actually, a lot of people suggest that you actually kind of massage the kale because it's so tough that it doesn't, it really can take on a lot of dressing and a lot of flavor. And you can even leave it, you know, make a salad one day and have leftovers the next day that will still taste nice, you know, whereas with a regular, you know, sort of lettuce or other green salad, you really can't do that because it's going to be just so wilty and kind of icky and watery the next day. So it's wonderful in that sense.
I noticed there's a beet recipe 2 pages after the first kale recipe, and I don't know if you saw the Facebook post this week. Are beets the new kale? It was just,
oh, really interesting.
Oh, just kind of
I did not. I didn't think about that. But, well, beets are really fun. I love making beet things with kids because they're always so kind of entranced by, you know, speaking of cooking being like magic, I mean, beets are so beautiful. Like, the color of them is so intense. You know, it stains your fingers. It can stain your face. It stains your cutting board. And it's just this really lovely, sweet flavor. And beet is also a polarizer. I think there are a lot of people who really hate it. But there's so many different ways to prepare it. The salad in my book is actually raw. It's a raw beet, and I wouldn't really suggest sort of biting into a beet like an apple. But if you grate it up, it has a really lovely sort of nice crisp texture and really lovely flavor. And you can of course pickle it. Of course, they're wonderful roasted. There's tons of ways to enjoy beets.
You do pay tribute to your Canadian heritage and include a poutine recipe in here. I notice we'll get to that
yes,
a different time.
You got me. Yeah, I do.
I want to talk before we go just about the free book. You actually provide the recipes online for nothing.
You bet. Yeah. Well, that's how it started out. I mean, it was my thesis project, and like I said, I wanted more than my mom to read it, so I decided let's make it free, and so anyone can read it. And also. I mean, fundamentally, it's a cookbook for people who can't really afford a cookbook. And so it was very important to me that there be no sort of barriers between people and the information. So it's freely available. And then for every one that you buy in the store, we're donating one to someone who needs it as well, which is something I'm incredibly proud of and so excited to be able to do.
It's a fun mission. Good and cheap. Eat well on $4 a day. Leanne Brown created it all and joined us today. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you so much. It was really fun.
All right. Take care.